Switzerland is one of the best organized, most affluent, and best educated corners of Europe. It's got a unique quality of life and a unique form of government. It's a country that's long intrigued me, and today I'm joined by a former U.S. ambassador to Switzerland and Liechtenstein, Susie Levine, and she's going to join us today to get some of our questions answered. Susie, thanks for being with us.
It's such an honor to be here, Rick. Thank you.
I'm talking to a former ambassador. Am I supposed to say Susie or your...
You know, I'll have the title of ambassador until I die, but I'm always Susie.
Okay, but thank you for your service, and tell me, first of all, in a nutshell, what's the job description of an ambassador?
The paramount duty of an ambassador really is to keep American citizens safe. That's, if you do nothing else, the most important thing to do. The good news is in Switzerland, that's relatively easy, except for a lot of those real adventure travelers who are like, yes, let's go squirrel suit jumping. That's a little bit harder to keep them safe.
You must get calls at the embassy of some American hot dog out there that did something really dangerous and regretted it.
Well, sadly, some of the saddest calls were actually not from them regretting it, but from their families, because Switzerland's very permissive in what they allow. And there were some of the most famous adventure travelers who unfortunately did perish while I was there. Yeah. And we did need to work through those logistics and situations.
So that would be a dimension of your work because you were serving in Switzerland. If somebody was serving in a different country, obviously they'd have a different kind of what's on the list to do today.
Absolutely. So that's the paramount duty. Mm-hmm. But I think about ambassadorships and our relationships with countries, sort of three different levers. One is economic relationships, another is political relationships, and another is security relationships. Mm-hmm. And each country has each of those different elements dialed to different levels. And in Switzerland, the economic dial is really turned up high. Our economic relationship is very, very strong, and we have a lot of economic ties. And our political and security dials are really more to third-party countries. So how do we partner together to impact other countries and other parts of the world? And so the specifics that I focused on during my time there, first and foremost, American citizen services, but also our economic relationship, and then how do we collaborate together to make the world a better place? And in addition to that, we did a lot in terms of our shared values around diversity, equity, and inclusion, and how to build tighter relationship between the United States and Switzerland and Liechtenstein in those dimensions as well.
Wow. We've got a lot to talk about. Yeah. Now, your story, how did you become ambassador to Switzerland? How long did you serve and who were you serving under?
Right. Well, I started my service in 2014 under President Obama, and I served until the end of his term, 2017. And I came to it, about a third of our ambassadors are non-career ambassadors. Two-thirds are career foreign service officers. And I had a long career in technology and in the nonprofit realm and also as a stay-at-home mom. I got on the radar of the Obama team, being very involved in his election and then staying involved when he became president and doing a lot of outreach and engagement. And when this opportunity came, his team asked me if I would serve, and I was humbled and honored to do so.
So do you remember what it was like on your first day? You're ready to go, the office is set up, and here you are representing the United States and our interests in the beautiful country of Switzerland. What was going through your mind? What did you aspire to accomplish?
Oof. As ambassador, the moment that you set foot or set body in the country, you are on. So the minute I landed, I was on. I remember driving up to the residence and meeting the Marines who were all lined up in their official posts to welcome me and to some of the key staff members. And it was surreal. It was unbelievable. Even at the airport experience was surreal. As ambassador, you're a four-star general equivalent, and you're the highest ranking member of the U.S. government always, except for the president, in the country.
So there's a pecking order in the hierarchy of these rituals and formalities and so on, and an ambassador is right there with the four-star general?
Correct. As such, given the role that the United States plays in Switzerland or in pretty much any country, you are quite the dignitary when you arrive. And so even the arrival process coming into the airport was pretty special in terms of being greeted at the plane.
That must be, when you go anywhere, it's just like, ladies and gentlemen, the ambassador of the United States.
It was wild. It's kind of being taken down to the tarmac, being, you know, scurried off in a vehicle to a special welcoming. So it was incredible and surreal. And, you know, we live in the Pacific Northwest here, Rick, right? It's very low key. We're fancy when our plaid matches our Gore-Tex, right?
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden to be in this environment was incredibly humbling.
Yes, I bet.
And then in addition to that, Switzerland is very special in how low key and modest it is.
Mm-hmm.
So fancy and garish has no place there.
No. But that must have been kind of refreshing for you because you're from the Northwest and that's a similar sort of style.
It was perfect.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Susie Levine. She's a former U.S. ambassador to Switzerland and Liechtenstein. She's joining us today on Travel with Rick Steves to talk about her experience as a diplomat in the world's most famously neutral country. Susie, when you finally got over all of the welcome to the new ambassador and so on, you sat down, what was expected of you from the people of Switzerland? What were they hoping to get out of their relationship with you?
First and foremost, it's to steward the relationship and have a channel of conversation with the United States. You just now mentioned Swiss neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a little kid in the United States and you're having a game of dodgeball or something like that, right? You pick teams and you're on team A or you're on team B. Very few people get picked to be the referee.
Uh-huh.
And so there's not actually a deep understanding of what neutrality means. And the service that they provide there is profound to our country. The Swiss are our protecting power in Iran. At the time, they were our protecting power with Cuba. And now they are protecting power with Syria. And what that means and the service that they provide, they are essentially functioning in keeping American citizens safe
in
those
countries
places.
Where the United States doesn't have good relations.
Exactly.
Like when I went to Iran to film there, we didn't deal directly with Iran. We dealt with Pakistan.
Right.
Apparently, because Pakistan had that relationship with Iran to deal with people Iran didn't want to deal directly with.
There you go. And so if, God forbid, something had happened to you when you were there, it would have been the Swiss who would have been the liaison for the U.S. government to determine your whereabouts and what's happening. And they provide that service and support for us today. And so
enemies on both sides of a conflict appreciate to have that neutral ground.
Exactly. And so part of what I believe the Swiss wanted from me was the opportunity to help the United States understand the value proposition of neutrality.
Uh-huh.
Meaning, how can people recognize that we aren't going to always agree with the Swiss? And that's okay. And not just okay, but it's actually really important in order to validate their neutrality. And then in addition to that, to be able to identify ways for them to engage even when it doesn't make sense for them to engage from a non-neutral perspective. Let me give you an example. When the United States was in heavy battle against ISIS in Syria.
Ah, yes.
They created a coalition against ISIS.
Uh-huh.
The Swiss don't join coalitions. They're not in NATO. They're not in the EU. They don't join coalitions. They are a partner to NATO, but they are not in NATO. What we were able to do is to find a way for them to engage, but not militarily. They were able to fund the demining of the towns that had been reclaimed as the United States and its coalition partners retook those so that Syrian citizens and civilians could safely re-enter their hometowns like Raqqa. And so it was, how could I be a diplomat sort of bidirectionally?
Is an analogy how the ACLU defends civil liberties, sometimes even in a way that offend me, because the ACLU will stand up for something in a principled matter, even because they have something more fundamental they're protecting, which is civil liberties. But they need to validate their legitimacy for people on all sides of an issue.
It is. That is a really valid analogy,
right,
where it may make some people uncomfortable. And that discomfort is something that is actually very important for the role that they play.
So let's hear it for neutrality in the countries that annoy us because they're so darn neutral.
Right.
They're providing a service.
At the same time, to their credit, with regards to Ukraine and Russia, there are times when they're like, you know what? That is just not okay and is against the human rights and is against this principle. They are members of the UN. They were actually one of the more recent member joiners to the UN, and they are now sitting on the UN Security Council, which is very special. They just joined it this year.
This is good. And as you say, they earned their credibility because they are so neutral.
Exactly. The other really unique aspect you talked about in your introduction, Switzerland's very unique political structure.
Mm-hmm.
Switzerland is a federal direct democracy. So here in the United States, there are 27 states that have some form of direct democracy, and that is referenda or initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that on a national level.
Mm.
And it doesn't actually take that much. It takes 100,000 signatures to actually bring an initiative to a national vote.
Okay.
And they vote four times a year. So coming into my position, there had just been a situation where something that the government wanted was overturned through a referendum. And it was an important lesson of, wow, the people are really an important fourth pillar of government here. And it's really important to build a relationship with the people of Switzerland. And so a large part of my effort was getting out and about and really getting to know people and connecting with them. So, for example, I was invited to go do a tweet beer in Chur, in Graubünden.
Uh-huh.
I went, and they were shocked. They're like, what? She's accepting our invitation to a tweet beer?
What is a tweet beer?
It is that on Twitter, people would meet and identify a time and a place to go have a beer and then go to that place.
And the American ambassador shows up.
There you go.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Susie Levine, if you're having a tweet beer. You can find Susie on Twitter by searching for Susie Levine. That's spelled S-U-Z-I-L-E-V-I-N-E. Susie is the former U.S. ambassador to Switzerland and Liechtenstein, serving under President Obama. She joins us today to talk about the importance of ambassadors and just what ambassadors do. Susie, you mentioned a third are one way and two-thirds are another way, kind of alluding to this notion that I have that many ambassadors are just big donors and they're chums of somebody who wins an election and they get sent to Norway because they always wanted to be the ambassador of Norway. And they don't even know anything about Norway, but they're just fancy people with fancy friends. And yeah, you can have this ambassadorship. Other people are professional career diplomats that really know what's going on. I had the great honor of having dinner with the ambassador in Bulgaria in a complicated corner of the world. And man, oh man, I gained a respect for the importance of having people who really speak the language, have an empathy with the people, have a long-standing connection with that culture so they can help out. What is your take on that balance between giving ambassadorships as presents? Some ambassadors have a real agenda. Some ambassadors don't even believe in the United Nations, depending on who the president is. How big of an issue is that? I've had people say, Rick, relax about that. That's a certain amount of corruption, but there's the staff is there that provides the consistency and the know-how, and the ambassador can just be, you know, for fancy engagements and this kind of thing. What are your thoughts about that whole issue?
I appreciate you basically bringing up the elephant in the room, for one. Let me first start by complimenting the Foreign Service officers and the local staff. In our embassy of 100, more than half of our staff were actually local staff. And they end up being the institutional knowledge because they do not rotate every 3.5 years like the Foreign Service staff do. And they are exceptional. And I have such deep appreciation for the people who choose as their full careers a life of public service. They are amazing. And I can't speak highly enough. And if somebody is thinking about that, they should go down that path. And people can join the Foreign Service until they're 55. And I actually had people, one, my head of public affairs had done PR for IBM. I had somebody in my security office who had been at Priceline and other people who had had other careers. And they're like, you know what? I'm going to now shift. A lot of people actually on my staff started after 9/11. They were inspired to serve. And that's the path that they chose. The purpose of individuals who come with different career backgrounds is that they bring other relationships to the table and can enhance the overall diplomatic value. I, for example, had worked in business and built a lot of business partnerships which really helped with the biggest success that I had, which was helping Swiss companies bring their apprenticeship models to the United States. And I wouldn't have been able to do that had I not learned about building business partnerships at Microsoft and at Expedia, and also in starting a couple of nonprofits. So I believe that a deep blend between the two of the career and non-career is very complementary. And you have fantastic folks who have served as career, and you have people who need some management development skills in career.
Yeah.
And you have people who are fantastic in the non-career space, as well as some people who perhaps need some better support and development.
Former Ambassador Susie Levine is telling us about her tenure to Switzerland right now on Travel with Rick Steves. She represented American interests in Bern from 2014 to 17 during the Obama administration. We have a link to her Twitter postings and Wikipedia page with the notes for this week's show. You'll find that at ricksteves.com/radio. Susie Levine, I thought a lot during 4 years of President Trump's time of the ideals of America and how they inspire people who love democracy around the world. And to me, those ideals are even bigger than our country. They shine on a hill regardless of what's going on in the United States. That is what freedom is all about.
Amen.
And when we pull out of the family of nations for whatever reason, politically, some people just want to build up the walls and hunker down and that's all they want to do. You know, that's their thing. Did you feel that the world missed America when we pulled out of our relationships in organizations like the United Nations and so on?
I think it's even more damaging than that, Rick. Mm-hmm. I think it's not just that they missed us, it's that they now don't trust us. And it is not going to take just this administration, but multiple administrations to rebuild that trust, because people don't know if they cut a deal, are they going to stay in that deal?
Yeah.
When you look at TPP, which was the Trans-Pacific Partnership, where that actually could have conceivably addressed some of the issues with regards to China that we're facing today,
yeah,
pulling out of that really was very damaging to our efforts on that front. Or the JCPOA, the agreement with regards to Iran, pulling out of that was very damaging to our position internationally. But this administration, the Biden administration, is working hard to rebuild that, putting great people in place and taking great pains to restore that trust. And hopefully in partnership with Congress can identify where there needs to be some codification of some of these efforts to make sure that they are not subject to the vagaries of political winds.
Wow. Well, that credibility, that consistency is probably an underrated value of our diplomatic staff. And thank goodness for people who are driven for a passion for democracy and freedom and the American values.
Absolutely.
That serve us both as ambassadors and as part of your staffs around the world. Susie Levine, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your service. Let's get together again and talk more about traveling in Switzerland.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Mark Adams journeyed to three continents to search for the legendary sunken city of Atlantis. He tells us where he thinks it might have been next on Travel with Rick Steves.